friend who had been living at the house. Jenkins, though, was in Florida.
Hey, Tsagats, join us Wednesday. We'll get you ready for NBA free agency. Our friend Amin Al-Hassan is our guest co-host, and we'll talk to Tom Juneau. That's Wednesday in the Dan Le Batard Show with me, Tsagats, on ESPN Radio.
Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped the 19-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaire hit by Taylor. One, two. He got it. He got it. Steamboat played well. McClaire has done it. McClaire has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up? Welcome in. Jonathan Hood, Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app on a rainy Tuesday night. Open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Instagram, IGJHood, on Snapchat, SnapJHood. We're going to hear from Dan Durkin from Summer of Football coming up in 7 minutes. Does a great job for TheAthletic.com. Also, we will go Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between at 8:35 here on ESPN 1000. Don't forget, an hour from now, Tuesday, Wrestling Tuesday. If you're watching SmackDown Live, if you're just a wrestling fan, we got you at 9 o'clock. Every Tuesday night at 9 after SmackDown's over on the USA Network, we got your information and some terrific interviews. And hope that you enjoy it, 9 to 9:30. If you're not one, tell somebody that's into it that it's going to be every Tuesday at 9 right here on ESPN 1000. So glad you're aboard today. Before we hear from Dan Durkin, before we do Summer of Football, NBA free agency is so lit. It's just amazing. You think that maybe the finals wasn't as interesting because it was a sweep and you just kind of knew it was a fait accompli that the Golden State Warriors are going to win the championship, right? The thing about the NBA, not just the culture, not just the vibe, not just the teams, the entire thing, everything when it comes to the NBA has interest. Because if it evokes emotion in you, whether you hate it or you love it, at least it's something, right? It's very polarizing. And when it comes to NBA free agency, there's no drama like NBA free agency drama. It really isn't. The NFL... 11:59, free agency comes, right? NFL. Oh, the Bears going to get Julius Peppers? Julius. Lovey. Going to sign? Yeah. That's the drama in the NFL. In the NBA, it's a whole different story. NBA, there's so many stories are swirling left and right. And a lot of it's led by LeBron James. So LeBron James, being the best player in the NBA, has a decision on what he wants to do in free agency. He has the right to exercise that free agency because we've seen him do it before. Went to Miami, leaving Cleveland the first time. Then from there, going back to Cleveland after 4 years with the Miami Heat. So now the question is, what's going to happen with LeBron? Well, I'm here to tell you that it's really not the summer of LeBron. The linchpin in all of this free agency, whether it is Kyrie Irving, well, actually, if it's Kawhi Leonard wanting to be traded, let's start there. If he wants to be traded from San Antonio, whether it's Kyrie Irving in Boston saying, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be here for the long haul. Whether it is Boogie Cousins. You know, it's not necessarily about LeBron James as much as it is Paul George. Paul George has an opportunity to opt in or opt out. 1 year with Oklahoma City and that offense looked kind of clunky. Did you ever watch the Thunder, say, against the Bulls? The Thunder with Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, it just didn't look very good. It didn't look like it was together. It reminded me of the Big Three when they first came together with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. It didn't look right. Same thing here. Do you realize that the Thunder were just a game better than they were last year from a one-loss record standpoint? The linchpin of all this is Paul George. Because everything that we continue to read and hear about, what Paul George played for the Indiana Pacers, even with the Oklahoma City Thunder, is that Paul George is on his way to Los Angeles because he wants to be in L.A. Because he's from there, he wants to play for the Lakers. He said as much when he's with Indiana that he wants to be in L.A. And so now the stories come out that Paul George may opt in and stay one more year with Oklahoma City. Now, here's how the kind of the pendulum swings. If Paul George stays in Oklahoma City, LeBron James has a decision. Do I go to L.A. without Paul George? Who am I bringing with me? And I know for some of you say, well, why does he have to bring someone with you? Well, the thing is, you want to compete. LeBron James with the cast of characters on that Lakers team is not enough to win multiple series in the Western Conference playoffs. As much as I trust LeBron, it's just the players around him. It's kind of like the Cavs situation, right? LeBron James was able to carry a dead carcass across the finish line to win the Eastern Conference. They were able to do that. But as far as trying to take down the Houston Rockets or a Golden State Warriors team, nah, it's not happening. It's not happening. And it just, once again, it accentuates the point that you cannot win a championship by yourself. Even the great Michael Jordan couldn't win one by himself. Even Bill Russell couldn't win a championship by himself. So I'm here to tell you that the issue, the key to all this is Paul George. Where's Paul George going? LeBron James has a couple of choices. Now, here's something the conspiracy theorist Felix Reyes gave me. Very interesting.
Some good stuff, though.
It is good. It is very good. I'm going to drop this seed right now. I'm going to drop this seed. You tell me whether or not you know where LeBron James is going. Now, all along, whether it's this show or the show I do with Jeff Dickerson on our ESPN national show, I've said all along that LeBron James is either going to Cleveland or going to Los Angeles. There is no Houston, Washington, Philly. That's not happening. Because I didn't want to hear that nonsense as soon as the season ended. Like, LeBron's going to go to these other places. What's going to happen is he's either going to stay in Cleveland or he's going to go to Los Angeles. So let me see if I can maybe kind of butter your bread here with this. So the report is, this is from the Hollywood Reporter, I believe. Space Jam 2 trailer to launch after LeBron James free agency announcement. According to Hype Magazine, and again, that's just one source, but according to Hype Magazine, the trailer for LeBron James' long-awaited Space Jam 2 will be revealed shortly after the four-time MVP makes his free agency decision. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, James' longtime friend and business partner, Maverick Carter, more than hinted that the four-time MVP's free agent decision would be aired on their uninterrupted platform. Goes on to say, according to the report, that James is expected to use his summer spotlight to highlight another upcoming project, Space Jam 2. Smells like Los Angeles to me.
It sure does.
I mean, you're going to launch Space Jam 2, and then your announcement is, I'm staying in Cleveland. No, if you're going to have something splashy like this, like Space Jam 2, that sounds like Los Angeles. Movies, obviously Hollywood, the big picture, the bright lights, the big city. It'd be kind of funny if, like, here's the trailer of Space Jam 2, I'm staying in Cleveland.
Supposed to be launching House Party 2 as well.
Yes. Yeah. But if he was going to do that, I mean, he was supposed to stay in Cleveland. I mean, just say it. Like if it's going to be another House Party movie, you might as well just stay in Cleveland. But for Space Jam.
Yes, where Warner Brothers Studios is at.
Ah.
There you go.
Ah. Sounds like Los Angeles to me.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do Summer of Football.
The Summer of Football at 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
To be part of a great team, here's Hilton blitzing off the slot again. Passer Hopkins, oh my goodness. Did he catch that? That's the touchdown catch of the year.
Chuck and step. Swing pass. Left side through in the screen 20. Got a block 25. Into space 40.
And he's
Todd Gurley hits the jet midfield.
He's gone.
Todd Gurley, 20, 10. Gurley for MVP. Touchdown, LA!
Early stages, second quarter. Popped up in the air. Intercepted. Eddie Jackson. Jackson is still going. Another defensive highlight. Touchdown, Bears.
The summer of football.
Rob gets it. Hands off to Sony Michel. What a hole down the right side. 10-5. Touchdown. Sony Michel rips off another big one. This time for 38 yards.
Breaking into open field and on the run is Josh Adams.
Josh Adams.
Inside the 30 and the 20 and the 10 and all the way home for yet another super run.
Here's Barkley. Big hole. Left side 20. He's to the 30. Avoids the tackle down the far left sideline. They can't catch him. 10-5. Barkley high steps it across the goal line. 92-yard touchdown run.
The Summer of Football with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
We are ready for football season, college or pro. Nobody covers it like ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app on the Under the Hood show. Every night we give you something football. Could be stats, could be a guest, could be a special interview. You just never know. Tonight we go to theathletic.com. And while we have this conversation with our guest, go to theathletic.com, subscribe, and check out Dan Durkin's great NFL and Bears coverage. He joins us in the Summer of Football here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN app for the first time. Dan, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
What's up, man? How you been, Jonathan?
Good. Does that make you get you ready for football or not?
Other than the torrential downpour that I see out the window right now, it's crazy to think that we're going to be in Bourbonnais in a month. We're going to be a week into Bourbonnais in a month. So, yeah, man, it's going to be here much sooner than people realize for sure. So I think there's some reasons for optimism this fall with the Bears. So it's definitely going to be a very intriguing preseason and then definitely regular season as well.
Well, Dan, I'm so glad that you're on the program. I want to talk to you about a number of things, especially when it comes to offense in the National Football League. So you write so much about RPOs and creative ways to garner yardage. How much has offensive variety changed in football over the past, say, 5 to 10 years?
Fairly significantly. I mean, when you think about the only feeder program for the NFL is college, you know, like the NCAA. And so when you have quarterbacks who have been running shotgun-based spread with RPO concepts pretty much since high school, because that's what high schools are teaching as well, you have to adjust. It's adapt or die in most sporting leagues, and the NFL is a little bit slower than others to come around to new ways of thinking. It's very much set in a league that's set in its ways. So I think that Andy Reid is actually the guy who probably brought more cutting edge concepts and has been on the bleeding edge of incorporating college concepts like shotgun based run game and, you know, passing game. Obviously some run pass options. Obviously Cam Newton brought a lot of those into the league as well. Colin Kaepernick, players like that. So I think that you're seeing a little bit of a transformation in terms of how coaches have to adapt their philosophies and open up their playbooks to the new style of skill position players that are available to them, just because, frankly, pocket passers, there aren't that many in each draft. Every quarterback has a little bit more mobility to them. They have different aspects of their game. You know, Sam Darnold is probably the most traditional pocket passer from the past draft, but every year you're seeing guys who can make plays with their legs as well. So, you know, it's a matter of adapting, and I think that the Bears, you know, obviously went that route as well to find somebody in Matt Nagy who could help Mitchell Trubisky as well to ascend into what they hope he is in terms of a franchise quarterback.
Dan Durkin from theathletic.com with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Dan, with Mitch Trubisky, you saw his film, you saw his mechanics. What stood out most about his mechanics? Was there a theme to his mechanics on film?
Yeah, his footwork. His footwork is just very inconsistent. When it comes to this is something that Greg Cosell pointed out, and after he kind of crystallized it and something so simple, he called him a locked leg front thrower. He's a guy who has a tendency to stiffen and lock his left leg, so his leg almost becomes like a fulcrum. So he'll fall over his leg rather than transferring his body weight from his right to his left and actually getting a little bit more velocity on the football and just to ensure a little bit more accuracy. And so the downside to that is the majority of his throws become all arm. So when you're talking about throws that are 30 plus yards down the field, they can lose a little bit of life over the course of the throw. So I think that's one of the primary focuses for Dave Ragone, the quarterback's coach, Mark Helfrich, the offensive coordinator, and obviously Nagy, is making sure that Mitch is really using his lower body and the ground force power he can generate from his feet on every one of his throws. Because when his feet are right and he does transfer his body weight and he gets his hips involved in the throw, he can really throw the football. He doesn't have a plus arm. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, throw the ball, you know, 50, 55 miles an hour at the combine when they do the miles per hour velocity. But he was around a 50. I think it was 51 was his average somewhere around there. So he has plenty of arm strength to make all the throws. Just needs to get more consistent with his lower body, specifically his feet. And that's a byproduct of playing in a shotgun offense. When you're already 5 yards deep in the pocket before the ball is snapped, your footwork isn't as important. You know, you're not timing routes up with the third or the fifth or the seventh step of the drop. Therefore, you know, footwork can get a little bit more sloppy. And he played in an exclusive shotgun offense at North Carolina. So it's going to be a difficult habit for them to break. But on the flip side to that, when you look at all the physical traits, plus mobility, very accurate, definitely very poised in the pocket. He is not afraid to get hit. He has all the physical traits to succeed in the NFL. So I think that if they can really get his mechanics repeatable, consistent, and properly engaging his lower body, I think that they might have something to work with here in Trubisky.
Dan, when it comes to pre- and post-snap reads, what are the keys to master that as a quarterback?
You know, it's really simplifying it a little bit for a quarterback as far as, like, you're going to key a couple players. Obviously, you're going to get the mic set for the offensive line so they know where their protection is. So they're basically setting zero, and then the count goes 1, 2, 3 on one side, and then 1, 2 or 1, 2, 3, depending on how the defense is lined up on the other. So understanding and being in agreement with how your protection is set up. So do I have enough players in to protect me on this? Do I need to keep a running back in? Do I need to keep a tight end in? So definitely a learning to see what the front is and what protection call you have, what adjustments you need to make there. But then more than anything is understanding what you're typically reading one safety. You know, one safety is going to give you an indicator. Are they bringing pressure on the side? How many players do they have on this side of the ball compared to how many receivers we have? So it's really simple math. It's just like little process of elimination you can do based on how many players they have in certain parts of the field. And then post-snap, you want to look and see if there's been any adjustments. Have they rotated? Did they have a strong safety dropped in the box pre-snap, and now he's back in a too high split look? So it's little things like that that the quarterbacks really need to key in on. They have to process so much information pre-snap and then obviously be able to make a decision with the football in 3 seconds or less after the ball's been snapped. So it's a lot of information. It comes down to repetition. It comes down to understanding the responsibilities of the 10 other men that you're on the field with. So it's a lot to ask a young quarterback, but I really do think that what Matt Nagy did very well with Alex Smith last year was give him pre-snap coverage indicators. He used his running backs very creatively, typically splitting his running back outside. If you take your running back out of the backfield, you get the defense to declare if it's man or zone. So just little keys and little cues you can give to your quarterback. Nagy did a really nice job with Alex Smith of that last year. So I would anticipate the same thing this fall with Mitch Trubisky, just to assist him as much as you can to give him as much pre-snap information as possible.
Dan Durkin from TheAthletic.com with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we do summer of football, as we get ready for the football season, college and pro. Dan, when it comes to Coach Nagy, what did you like most about his time at Kansas City schematically? Because for years we have seen those that understand offense, but maybe it doesn't tailor, doesn't jive for what the quarterback needs. Do you think that Nagy and Trubisky could be on the same page?
I do. I think I saw a lot of similarities in the scheme that Mitch ran at North Carolina. And that was, an RPO base where he's asking the quarterback to do a box count. You know, you have a run play packaged with a pass play, and then it's up to the quarterback to make a decision. A lot of those concepts were incorporated by Matt Nagy with Alex Smith in Kansas City. I think Mitch is a better athlete than Alex Smith. I think Mitch has a better arm than Alex Smith. But what I really liked about his offense was he made plays look the same from a formation and a personnel perspective pre-snap. So you give the defense a look and say, oh, yeah, we saw this look, and they ran you know, they ran a bubble out of this, and then all of a sudden he's running inside zone out of it. Or next time, same thing. They run the bubble again this time, or they run a pop off of that. So the ability to give the defense a static look, but then to have three and four and five different variations of plays that start the same, so the defense is reading keys just like the offense is, but then all of a sudden you have a small little wrinkle and a small little variation on that that you're able to get the defense guessing and assuming what the play is going to be. I saw a lot of that in Mark Helfrich too when I went back and looked at Oregon's tape. A lot of similarities between these two as far as simplifying the personnel packages, simplifying the formations, but then having multiple plays built into those packages that the quarterback can then get the offense into the right position and having conversions and adjustments built in. So just really smart packages of plays that he put in for the quarterback, simplifying things for them. But I think that you're going to see a lot of college concepts brought in. RPOs, zone read, are the things that you see every Saturday in college football. I think you're going to see quite a bit of it with the Bears. It's going to look radically different than what Bears fans have been accustomed to seeing, definitely over the last 3 years, and then even back to the Trestman era when you think about a pure West Coast offense.
Dan, I know I'm making you go back a few years, but I'm interested in knowing what you thought of Matt Stafford at Georgia versus what you see now. Because I know that the team's success is not necessarily predicated all 100% on the quarterback, but the Lions continue to just kind of just hang around 7-9, 9-7. It's just a team that hasn't been able to get over the hump. Have you seen improvement from Stafford year to year, or is it the same?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think he has emerged as probably one of like the six or seven best quarterbacks in the league, and I think a lot of that has to do with Jim Bob Cooter. The offensive coordinator there, you can just, if you look at him from just a statistical perspective, there's a huge spike in completion percentage, you know, passer efficiency rating, touchdown to interception ratio, all of those things, and it correlates back to Jim Bob Cooter. And I think that a lot of that is also the same thing that he did at Georgia. A lot of spread concepts, a lot of shotgun, getting him where he's comfortable. He can make any throw on the field. He's got a very live arm. He's got a very accurate arm. But just getting the ball out quickly, letting him make decisions pre-snap, not necessarily predetermined reads, but having an idea of where he wants to go with the football early on, and then just getting a nice combination of receivers that they have. Really like what Golden Tate can do. You know, obviously, Marvin Jones can stretch the field vertically as well. So just getting a nice complement of players that really accentuate what he does well, and that's making quick decisions and getting the football into somebody's hands while they're still moving so they can make yards after the catch. So I really think that Matt Stafford is, it's crazy to think that he is still developing, but he really is. I mean, he has a chance to sign two or three more contracts when it's all said and done. I think he's only 29 years old. So if he's able to stay upright, and I think that they're going to try and develop a little bit more of a power running game. I believe they drafted Kerryon Johnson. So like, you're going to see a little bit of a shift in Matt Patricia and what they're going to want to do there to take a little bit of that strain off of Stafford, just because I think from 2013 to 2017, no team ran the ball less than the Detroit Lions. So they completely put everything on Stafford's shoulder, literally and figuratively, and now they need to give him a little bit of assistance. But I certainly saw a lot of the same concepts you brought in, that Jim Bob Cooter brought in, getting the ball out quickly, letting his elite arm strength and his accuracy really take over.
Well, here's what's going to happen next year and probably in 2020, and I'm just going to try to put a little extra money in your pocket. You have to convince Greenberg over there at the Athletic for you to cover the Alliance of American Football and then the XFL in 2020. You need something to do after the season, Dan.
This is true. This is true. And who are the coaches in that round? It's like Brad Childress. I'm trying to think of the other guys that have been signed up to do that.
So Brad Childress is with the Atlanta team. Tim Lewis, Birmingham. Mike Singletary. Oh boy.
I thought Samurai was squeezed in there somewhere.
He's the Memphis team. Steve Spurrier is back on the sidelines in Orlando.
Oh man.
Rick Old Neuheisel. Rick Neuheisel, wow, as a head coach, makes a terrific talk show host. Dennis Erickson is going to do the Salt Lake team. Mike Riley, San Antonio, and Mike Martz, San Diego.
Did you say Dennis Erickson?
Yes, I did say Dennis Erickson.
Is he like, he's got to be like 75, man. Seriously. What type of insurance plans do they have for the coaches in this league? Because everybody you named is probably 65 plus.
I don't know how this is going to work. I just,
neither do I. I'm more concerned for the coach's health than I am the players in this league as I'm thinking about it right now. But actually, this is pretty intriguing now that you're talking about it. I mean, I think covering a potential playoff game and that could be a very interesting experience.
All right. So I think that I'm going to plant the seed now. You tell Greenberg, like, this is what you want to do in the offseason. You want to break this down.
I like it a lot. So was that 8 teams?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, if nothing else, Dan, for the comedy.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Like I'm very intrigued to know what the media coverage is going to be for this week.
Well,
because you're going to have to do something unique in order to keep people interested and give them something that they can't get in the NFL.
Well, this all starts with you.
Because early is going to be the challenge.
Well, it starts with you and theathletic.com.
I like it. I like it a lot. No, it's amazing to me how I don't know how that's going to be able to be sustainable over a period of time. I mean, it could be guys that are retreads that are trying to get themselves back in the league. But I mean, I think the CFL has kind of become a little bit like that for the league. So yeah, I'm completely intrigued by what this thing is in what the shelf life of it is going to be. I mean, a season, 2 seasons. What's the over under?
Maybe two. I mean, I'd say two. But I think that the concept for this is on theathletic.com for when you have these screenshots and you show the plays, they're comedic. You don't actually show good plays. You just show how bad things are. That's how you do that.
From your hood to J-hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted. I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood, brought to you by the fine folks over at Northwestern Football, Chicago's Big Ten team. The Wildcats return to Ryan Field this fall after a 10-win season to host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and many, many more. Buy tickets now at NUSports.com, NUSports.com. Under the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, and everything else in between.
Under the Hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned.
I don't even know what that means. Look under, I got an engine underneath my hood.
So let's start with our first story, shall we? Ow. New York Post. Man talks on phone while riding on hood of a car. Doing 70 miles an hour.
Under the hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees.
No, not under the hood, Madden. No, on top of the hood, part of the expression. A man was spotted riding on the hood of a car, barreling down the express lane of I-95 in Florida late Sunday, and appeared to be talking on the phone, according to one driver who recorded video of the wild stunt. What the actual F, the driver said. We are mid-highway. A female passenger in the car seemingly could not believe her eyes, according to the video. What is that? She said, oh, my God. The driver is Daniel Mida. Daniel Mida told the Miami News Times that the man on the hood was somehow hanging on the Mercedes-Benz C300 with one hand and appeared to be talking on the phone with the other. A woman behind the wheel, meanwhile, was talking on the phone as well. Likely to the man hanging onto the car on the most dangerous highway in the world. It was literally crazy, Mida said. He's 19. The guy was looking left and right, and the phone was in one hand. It didn't look like he was alarmed or fazed by anything. He was just chilling, like nothing was weird.
So strange.
Okay, I'm trying to think about it. I mean, no, okay. I would not do this. Let me ask you this, Davis. Do you know someone from the hood that might have tried this?
No. Now, this is culture down in Houston. They call it ghost riding, where you actually put your car and drive. It goes really slow, and you get out and dance next to the car as it drives down the street. I don't think anyone's ever done it on the expressway in this form of fashion. So I don't know what he's doing. Had to be some type of narcotic involved. Had to be.
Davis goes right to the drugs.
I mean, it had to be.
But you don't know anybody that would have tried that.
Oh, absolutely not.
Felix?
Nope. I wouldn't. I know for sure I wouldn't, but I don't know anybody that crazy enough to do that.
Female involved, too.
Do you?
So, do I know someone that would have done that? Not back in the day, no.
But now.
But then, no.
Not back in the day, but it sounds like you might. Maybe Eric might do something this crazy.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking.
Eric would do this.
Eric would do
he
something.
He probably has a story back in college when he did something like this.
I did it. I was on the hood of the car. Okay, moving it around. All right, that's what I was doing.
We're going to have to ask him next time he's here.
He would probably say yes to that. Now, of course, I've seen these weird tricks like on motorcycles. I've seen plenty of those. Guys just lounge on the motorcycle, doesn't has one foot on the pedal and the other one's got his foot on the handlebar and driving 30, 40 miles. I've seen that before, but that's just, it's weird. I wouldn't.
But see, on streets like Stony, King Drive, we see familiar things like that, tricks on the bike and all of that stuff.
Yes.
Pardon the expression.
Yes.
But on the expressway, 95 is nothing but sports cars in between Fort Lauderdale and Miami. It's bananas. So it definitely is the most dangerous expressway. And to do that, I hope. Hopefully he was in the right lane.
We apologize for all those tricks on the bikes. In Florida, we stayed there. I'll get a call on that. A Florida man was standing in a fire and chanting before he picked up a stick and started swinging it at officers while possibly on drugs. On Friday, officers arrived at a home on Northeast Pine Island Lane around 1:30 in the morning to find a man completely naked in the front yard holding a knife. John Hennessy, interesting last name.
J.R. Smith, you said?
I said John Hennessy, okay, of Cape Coral, was chanting and dancing around a fire in the front yard. Police said Hennessy was standing in the fire at one point and chanting gibberish. He also threw a rock through a window at a nearby home. Hennessy dropped a knife and he was holding and picked up a large wooden stick, swinging at officers. Officers electronically subdued him and placed him in handcuffs. Wait a minute. If you stunned him, don't say officers electronically subdued him. I mean, what is he, Herbie Hancock? What do you mean? What do you mean he electrically subdued him? What do you mean electronically subdued him means that you put him on the shocker? Am I right or not?
For sure.
Okay, so don't clean up the story. Whoever wrote this in the Bradenton Times, electronically. What do you call that in the street, Davis, when you are electronically subdued?
Pop locking?
No, I don't mean that. No. He got shocked. That's what happened. He wasn't even playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. He got shocked. That's what happened.
Oh.
Felix Reyes.
All right, guys.
I'd like to send a shout out to Felix, who is producing this show, of course, in Europe. That's why we had the delay.
All right, guys. All right. We have a very funny Drake story here. So Tiffany Haddish, if you guys aren't familiar with her, Tiffany Haddish.
I know who Tiffany Haddish is. She's going to be in this movie with Kevin Hart that I won't watch.
That's correct. So Tiffany Haddish revealed that she was supposed to go on a dinner with Drake, but he stood her up. During a conversation with the Girls Trip ghost star, Jada Pinkett Smith, for her Facebook Watch series, Red Table Talk, Haddish revealed that she is on the market and would like to date, Haddish said. I really don't have a lot of time for it, but when somebody asks me out on a date that I'm interested in and like hanging out with, I will clear the schedule. I will make some time. One of these men that she was talking about was actually Drake. Yeah. Haddish, who appeared in Drake's Nice For What video, swapped texts with the Six God about the video, and eventually he proposed a date. He was like, let me take you to dinner, she recalled. She got a waxing appointment and a nice dress, but Drake ended up bailing. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, so what time are you heading out? Are you sending a car? Like, where are we going, she said. And he's like, oh man, my bad, family emergency. I'm in Canada right now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. Haddish said she had cleared her schedule.
It's like an episode of Atlanta. But Drake was supposed to be there, right, Davis?
The pills wore off.
Right, exactly.
I like this next line. She said, Haddish said that she had cleared the schedule for the rapper. I could have made $100,000 today, but I was trying to see what Drake was all about.
Put this on the poll at ESPN 1000. Was Drake right to stand up Tiffany Haddish? Yes or no? Just put it out there. Just see how that comes back.
I'm interested to see how that comes back.
Because if I'm Drake, I would have been in Canada too. Really? Tiffany Haddish? Now listen, there's different strokes for different folks.
He could have let Daddy Dennis take care of that.
Dennis would have done it because he's really come in. He's really come on the scene lately, has he not? I mean, he really has. Okay, I respect what Tiffany Haddish. I respect the come up. Clearly, I respect her hustle. She's just not my type. I can't date somebody that's just way too louder and talks more than I do. That's not gonna happen. Davis, would you concur? Would you concur?
I would totally agree. All in on that one. I'm putting all my chips down.
I mean, really. I mean, Tiffany Haddish. What you see on these shows that, whatever that show is on TNT, I forgot the name of it now.
The Last OG?
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes. I couldn't hang with that.
Too much.
Nah, I couldn't do it. It's
too much.
Because it's too much like home for me. Not my home now, but back in the day. It's too much like Tiffany Haddish. What you see on that show is Tiffany Haddish. And Girls Trip, that was Tiffany Haddish in the movie. What you see on television, like on a personal level,
Like, bless her for hitting while the iron is hot.
That's fine. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. She's funny. She's entertaining. And she, just like Kevin Hart, she's getting it done right now. I'm just saying, from a dating standpoint, we would not be a match. We would not be a match. I mean, she would be there. We'd be at a really nice restaurant here in downtown Chicago. Like, Tiffany, you know, I really like this relationship. That we're really going places. And, you know, I really want to commit. So I just thought we'd go here.
Oh, my goodness. A five-star restaurant. Oh, do they got scrimps?
No, they don't have scrimps.
So, Jonathan, Drake used the family emergency, and he's in Canada right now.
Yeah.
And by the sounds of it, she, you know, she got stood up, and he used an excuse. What would be your excuse? You got to have something good in the pocket.
Oh, I would just always use work for an excuse. Always.
You in the studio?
Always. You know, I got to get in the studio, honey. Like, I'm sorry, but my agent wanted me to be in the studio right now. Let's, you know, let's try to turn this around. Let's make our schedules work for the next time. And it would never be a next time.
You know another reason why I couldn't do it? She doesn't know how to keep her mouth closed.
Well, exactly.
So whatever would go down.
This is a perfect example.
You know, would be out there.
She was out there for the story. To try to put Drake out there and put him on blast. Why? Why would you do that? See, that's just not a match for me. Now, for other dudes that can handle that, cool. You want to date someone that sound like your mama? That's fine. I don't. That's just me. I don't want to do that. Tiffany Haddish and I would not match. Now, she's entertaining, but from afar.
You guys would be a funny date, though.
No, we wouldn't.
Watch the sarcasm going back and forth.
No, that's not going to work, man. I can't date somebody that's funny to me. I can't do that. Is that weird? When I was dating, I could not date someone that was funny to me. It's just you can't. It's not like I want to dominate the conversation, but like, it's a story, but I can't tell that story on the air. It's about Nick, but I can't tell
it's
that.
A podcast.
It's about Nick. It's about Nick.
UTH pod.
Yeah, it's about Nick. Was on a date with some girl that was funnier than him, and I'm like, you really can't date someone funnier than yourself. He dropped her. I can't tell that story on the air, but guess what?
Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall.
I'll just tell that story on the air. Sean Davis.
Yo, now, out of all the things that could happen at a Diana Ross concert,
yes,
at Hollywood Bowl,
yes,
friend of the program, we've had him on a couple of times, all right? Lee Daniels, Oscar Award-winning director, mm-hmm, was approached by former Rockefeller CEO Dame Dash.
Uh-oh.
Front row, Diana Ross concert, while Dionne Warwick was on stage opening up. This video is viral right now. You can find it anywhere on Twitter.
That's funny.
And literally laces him with nothing but expletives for up to 3 minutes in front of everybody. Why is he doing this? The confrontation was captured on camera and shows Dash bashing the Empire producer for allegedly failing to repay him $2 million that he gave him for the movie Precious. And he has not been repaid. Mm. According to the man behind Dash, Diabetes Network, he gave Daniels the money to jumpstart his film career nearly a decade ago and privately sued him for it in the past. This is what people around the situation heard Dame Dash say.
Mm-hmm.
As a black man, I gave you the money that you needed. So how are you going to not give me my money? How? $2 million, bro? That's like working capital. The rest of the clip shows the honor-up actor threatening to go public with his lawsuit if Lee Daniels doesn't give him the money owed. The video also shows Lee Daniels saying, "You're right, I was wrong. I promise I'll get the money to you. I'll call you. Just let me call you, Damon. I know I was wrong."
Man, why is Lee Daniels always in trouble?
What do you think Monique was doing when she saw the video today?
She laughing and telling five people on Periscope that he ain't nothing.
Jonathan Hood.
And I got what it takes to rock the mic right here.
On ESPN 1000. And the ESPN
I hate you,
app.
Lee Daniels.
Tuesday, Wrestling Tuesday takes place at 9 o'clock right here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN app. We'll hear from Dave LaGreca from SiriusXM Busted Open. We'll get his thoughts. Also, what did Eric Bischoff say about Brutus the Barber Beefcake and also the passing of Vader? All part of our wrestling segment, Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday, next.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
State Street Studio, home of ESPN 1000, Chicago's all sports station. This is WMVP AM Chicago. Tuesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening for the Worldwide Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship.
Wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, our first event of the evening is a one-fall match with a 15-minute time limit.
There ain't nobody. There ain't nobody in wrestling who can make me quit. And that's the bottom line. Cause Stone Cold said so.
Tuesday.
We are what wrestling's all about. New York City here. Chicago here. JD on my left. Linda on my right. But I'm not telling any of the girls who I'm going to give it to in Chicago until that night. Woo!
Tuesday, wrestling. Tuesday returns to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.